You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
I'm Deanne Jennings, and I'm here to share data and dive into the world of finance with you.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management, Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
And welcome aboard. It is time for New Retirement Radio on WTCM with Prout Financial Design in Traverse City, starring Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
It's great to be here. Good morning, Ron, on Thursday.
First.
Not 11/31, December 1.
Boom.
December 1, 2022. Welcome. Thank you for listening. We have a lot to talk about today. Joining us today is the Deanne Jennings, Director of Operations. Welcome, Deanne.
Thank you. It's good to be here. Welcome. Welcome. Good morning, everybody.
Yeah. It'll be a trio here this morning. Heidi Cartwright is not joining us. She's under the weather. Feel better soon, please, Heidi.
Yes, please.
You bet. So boomers are spending more than they can afford in retirement. This is a report from the 2022 Spending and Retirement Survey. Now, this was done in concert through financial support from the EBRI, Retirement Income Employee Benefit Research Institute, Retirement Security Research Center. How's that for a mouthful? Alliance for Lifetime Income, LGIM, and Edelman Financial Engines. Edelman is one of the largest financial planning organizations in the nation, if not the largest. So lots of folks working together. This was published through a story by A Dime Saved is the name of the publication. So results from the 22 Spending on Retirement Survey published by the Employee Benefit Research Institute found that retirees are spending much higher or a little higher than they can afford in 22. Now, 17% of this population responded in 2020 that they were spending more than they felt comfortable with. Now it's 27%, pretty dramatic increase in the actual percentage. The Spending and Retirement Study was fielded during the summer of 22. Nearly 2,000 American retirees between the ages of 62 and 75 were surveyed to assess how spending patterns and retirement well-being have changed since 2020. Among those who decreased either their essential discretionary spending since the pandemic, the most common reason cited by roughly 9 out of 10 was concern about inflation. So, surprise.
Surprise.
Cutting spending. Overall, approximately 7 in 10 retirees say that they have 3 months of emergency savings. So, that's a good thing, to have at least 3 months of savings. Similar to 2020 survey results, 7 in 10 say Social Security is a major source of their income. A major source.
Wow. What percentage?
7 in 10. So that'd be 70%. 70.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the importance of spending and planning for this thing.
That recent Social Security cost of living increase that was announced
doesn't
kick in till January, correct?
Correct.
So for the last year, they've been getting the current amount as inflation's gone up.
Right.
Yeah.
So really feeling the impact. And that increase, of course, is 8.7%. 8.7. Approximately half of retirees say they spend less than $2,000 each month.
Wow.
Approximately half. While 1 in 3 spends between $2,000 and $4,000 each month. And Deanne and I were talking about this before the show. I had never seen this stat before.
It's very interesting.
Should be a stat you repeat once or twice in the next couple of months, ain't it, Deanne?
Mm-hmm. Just, you know, absolutely.
Remind us all.
Yeah.
16% spend between $4,000 and $7,000 a month, with only 3% spending $7,000 or more each month. So 84,000, 85,000 if we want to round a bit, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's net.
This is what they spend. So that could be called net. It's not necessarily net income. It's
right.
just what they're spending. Approximately. For those who are willing to admit yeah. what they spend each month, right?
2,000. Half of the people, you said, spend less than 2,000 a month.
Absolutely.
Yes. So, well, that's living close.
Yeah, that's your mortgage. That's food.
Right.
That's everything.
Yeah. Food, electricity.
Mm-hmm. Medical.
Medical. Yep.
On average, retirees rate their satisfaction in retirement as 7.0 in 2022, compared to 7.4 in 2020, on a scale of 1 to 10.
1 to 10.
Yeah.
So just happy not to be working.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which Joel Frank, we're going to talk. We should have had him here to talk about it. Yeah. I mean, he'll be the one that we can talk about him before retirement and after retirement. You know, maybe we should have him in 3 months after. You know, just
right. We should do that.
But you're going to actually have him on your show next week.
In the next week, sometime. Yeah.
Retiree segments that reported lower senses of well-being across the measures of standard of living. Alignment and satisfaction included those without defined benefit. That's guaranteed monthly income plans, okay? Or other annuity income with low financial knowledge, those not using a financial advisor who are not married and who are female. So retiree segments, that reported lower senses of well-being did not have a guaranteed income source outside of Social Security. So isn't that interesting, too? And we've seen that. We've seen this from previous stats, that those with guaranteed incomes from some source other than Social Security tend to be happier in retirement because they know that it's coming in every month.
But that's really difficult to get through to people that they should start saving as soon as they can for retirement. As much as they can. I mean, not everybody can tuck away, but even a little bit, right? Even if you start in your 20s and you tuck away $50 a month, right?
Exactly. It's the getting started that's the big key. So many, I think, don't believe that it's going to make any difference. And or that they could even afford it. So the key is just to get started. It's amazing how you can make adjustments. Many will make adjustments when they begin saving. The same adjustments that can be made in a budget. All right, where can we cut? What can we do about this? How can we get rid of the debt? Whatever it is. And that's a big Dave Ramsey question, among many others, is how do we cut our spending? And it's amazing. Once you begin to work on it and apply it, it works over time. Next. The average ratings for alignment and satisfaction have declined since 2020. While more retirees say that spending has increased and is higher than they can afford, inflation appears to be a major driver of the misalignment between expectations and reality. A double-edged sword that undoubtedly increases actual spending, but also reduces spending likely out of a desire to protect future purchasing power. So, you really have some difficult decisions having to be made because of this inflationary spiral that we've been on. It just makes it really difficult.
We were talking in the last segment, and I finished by saying I want to contact the economics professor at Hillsdale, Dr. Gary Wolfram, who's been on with us before, and just say, do you have any thoughts as to why, let's say in the 1960s, even into the 70s, it seemed like it was... it costs less money to raise a family. You could do it on a one income.
Yes.
To own a house or rent a house. Expenses, I assume expenses have gone up because today they're saying millennials or certain generations don't want to have kids because they can't afford them.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We heard you talking about it.
What caused that? Yeah.
You bet. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Expanding the study underscores... one piece before that. Having a spending plan, I started this, before transitioning to retirement is important in retirement well-being. I would call it critical.
Hmm.
So you know. Even if you haven't done it before retirement, write it down. You know, I would view it basically like a battle plan. Mm-hmm. If we're feeling this tight about things, and or I'm this concerned about what we're spending, obviously not everybody's in that boat, or you just want to know, write it down. You'll be surprised.
I think this idea is so fascinating to me. I think it's brilliant that someone would, you know, work out that financial plan, that spending financial plan, but then also test drive it or try it out before you actually retire. You know,
you bet.
It's such a great thing to do.
I do. Give it a try.
I know a friend who retired, and she said to my wife and I, if you're smart, about a year before you retire, start mm-hmm. living
yes.
on what you're going to retire
yeah.
on
yeah.
and give it a try out.
I talk about the ability to make adjustments too.
Yeah.
Because you obviously then you'd have that ability. You could say, oh my gosh, I mean, this has been a real surprise, or, you know, I think we're going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
There are things we can cut out, but the champagne for breakfast, no way.
That's, yeah, that's especially right. when you mix it with orange juice.
Mimosas.
It's just crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, what are those things called? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Champagne and caviar.
Yeah.
Gosh.
This study underscores how expanding availability of professional financial help and improving awareness of protected income options contribute to an improved retirement security. This is from Jason Fichtner, Senior Fellow for Alliance for Income and Retirement Income Institute. Next, the majority of retirees surveyed were in their 60s. The average birth year was 1955. And lastly, survey respondents were 45% male and 55% female. Over half reported being married or living with a partner, and 44% reported being divorced, separated, or widowed. And this is all from nonprofit, independent, and unbiased resource organization, the Employee Benefit Research Institute. I just think it's fascinating to become more aware as we go along. Okay, what is the average? I think when we are able to share the averages of where people are at, when we're teaching classes and courses like this, retirement planning today, just to make people aware of here's where the averages are, to help give us all, if you will, a benchmark of what's going on. Because intuitively, to me, we always wonder, I wonder how the Johnsons are doing down the street, right? Mm-hmm. How do they do it? Yeah. How do they make it work? Well, it's like anything else. It's kind of boring in some respects. The people who study get the better grades. Mm. Ho-hum. Really?
Ho-hum.
Yes, indeed. It's not always, can I say this word on the radio, sexy.
Oh.
It's not always sexy. Sometimes it's just taking the time to really take a look at it. Where are we going to be? What's our incomes going to be? What are our incomes coming from? Where are they going to be? How are they going to be generated? And how are we going to do with expenses? How are we going to do this thing? Treat it like a battle plan. And you will, and if especially if you need in concert with a financial advisor, obviously that's what we're here for, to help people, coach them through all of these different issues related to retirement. Mm-hmm. You're going to tend to move the success ratio significantly over to your side of the stadium. Now, it's almost like U of M going into OSU.
Oh.
Who thought that they were going to kill them, huh? Just destroyed them.
Destroyed them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that picture, that video of JJ doing the parade wave to the people leaving the stadium. Who would have thought at the beginning that ever would have been the case? I sure didn't. You know, full disclosure, there's no way I thought they were going to go into OSU and do that the way that they did. So if you want to move the chances over to your side, put some time into it. Mm-hmm. Get some help. Get some advice. Counseling can be some of the best thing you can do. Either a financial advisory, if you will, attorneys and or accountants can all help you move the needle toward your side. Common questions and maybe not so common questions that may help us all.
Absolutely.
You bet. Go
for it. This article is entitled Random Real Life Questions and Answers. And I want to preface this by saying this article is a perfect example of how complex financial questions and answers can be, and how important it is to follow the rules, because you could really lose a lot if you don't. And so it's important to seek that financial advisor or expert if you have questions. All right, so every day the EdSlot Elite IRA Advisor Group receives dozens of retirement-related questions from advisor members. Here's a random sampling for some of those communications. It's been a busy season for us at Prout Financial Design with Roth conversions, and that window of opportunity for Roth conversions for 2022 is quickly closing.
It is, you bet. Hmm.
And we've been talking about Roth conversions a lot on the radio show. So this is a question regarding Roth conversions. I was told by a very successful person that Roth conversions were ending. Is this true? This is definitely not true. There was a proposal in the Build Back Better bill to limit certain Roth conversions, but those proposals never materialized. There are no limits on Roth conversions.
It's a common misconception. Many believe that you have to comply within the income limits or be within certain income limits, or not participating in some sort of a retirement plan to be able to do a Roth conversion. There are no limitations to doing a Roth conversion, transferring or converting, rather, a part or all of your IRA to a Roth. That is a Roth conversion.
Mm-hmm. And it's such a benefit to do that conversion. Good save in taxes.
If done over time and mm-hmm. done properly, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yep. Can a business owner contribute to both a SEP and a Roth IRA? Yes, participation in a SEP has no impact on whether a person can also contribute to a Roth IRA. However, you must still abide by the Roth IRA income phase-out levels.
So this would be for self-employed individuals, all those who own their own company and are considering making a contribution either for this year, for 22, or into 2023, still for 2022. It's one of the few retirement accounts or retirement plans where you can actually make contributions after year end and until your filing date for taxes, which could theoretically be until October 16th, I think it is, of 23. So think about it.
Is that
what a great way to leverage
time
to your benefit.
That's if you, what do you call it, extend?
If you're self-employed, if you extend your taxes.
Okay.
No, you don't have time, and or you don't want to make the full contribution, so you can extend it out. As long as you paid, I think it's 90% of the taxes owed, then you're not going to have any penalties due as a result of having filed late, okay?
Good. This next question, Dennis and I were having quite the conversation about it, and it's another reason why a perfect example how things can be complex. My client is being laid off in December. He turns 55 in 2023. Can he use the age 55 exception on his 401k? To leverage the exception, you must separate from service in the year you turn 55 or later. If he can delay his termination until January 2023, then yes. If not, then unfortunately he will not be able to use the age 55 10% penalty exception. The difference 1 month can make.
A rule is a rule.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. A deadline is a deadline.
55 is the speed limit, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So that's a great point. So think about this in terms of, do I need to take withdrawals from my 401k to help with income?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the key, because if you are 55 or older in the year in which you are separated from service from a 401k, then you can avoid the 10% penalty if you need to take withdrawals
mm-hmm.
from that same retirement account to supplement your income.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you have to put it back, whatever you take out?
No, it's taxable. Taxable
it's
income.
It's taxable.
But you avoid then the 10% penalty on that.
Mm-hmm.
So think about this. If you're going to draw $20,000 out, you're going to avoid then $2,000 mm-hmm. of penalties on that amount.
Which 10%. Which is a nice chunk of change to
it
save.
It is.
Yeah.
You bet.
Yeah.
So think about it in terms of, okay, what am I going to need if I'm being let go? And am I close to 55? Make a big difference. We've got clients right now. In fact, saw one this week that left a certain amount in his 401k so that he could take withdrawals because he was retiring relatively early And he's still not yet 59 and a half, but he's taking the withdrawals, left some money in his 401k, also has money in an IRA. He can take money out of the IRA, but he's got to pay the 10% penalty. However, because he left monies in his 401k for this exact purpose, he can take income on a continuing basis to supplement himself, his pension, and all the rest. Okay.
So good to know. A 90-year-old tried to roll over his $1.9 million IRA in January.
A 90-year-old?
A 90-year-old $1.9 million IRA.
1.9?
1.9.
Okay.
Yes. The bank erroneously put all the money into a regular brokerage account. He got sick and his son discovered the mistake. Are we stuck with the distribution? And the answer is you are not stuck. One of the 12 reasons for self-certification when the 60-day rollover window is missed is an error was committed by the financial institution making the distribution or receiving the contribution.
So $1.9 million added onto income would mean, let's just shoot from the hip here. I don't, obviously we don't know his personal tax situation, but just multiplying here, let's just do roughly $2 million yeah. times 30%. It would be at least 30% is how much? 2 million times 0.3 equals 600,000 bucks.
Yes.
So, oh my gosh, this is self-certification. Self-certification has not been here this long. Now, previously he could have sent done a private letter ruling to the IRS and, 6 months to get a response. I don't know. It's a long time. Mm-hmm. Self-certification, again, does what, Deanne? Go ahead and read that again.
Self-certification, yes. An error was committed by the financial institution making this distribution and receiving contribution.
So self-certification can, in essence, you can blame it on the financial organization for messing it up and avoid $600,000 approximately.
Yes.
In penalties and taxes. Actually, no penalties, all tax. So it's critical to know. If you're in the middle of something like this and a mistake has been made, consult with a good financial advisor who knows how the heck to pick up the pieces, if you will. Many times, not every time, but many times they can be picked up and help you avoid those penalties and costs.
Okay. Yeah, kudos to this person asking this question. It saved him $600,000.
Yeah, at least.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
All right, so this is a confusing example, so bear with us, but we'll discuss it in detail afterwards. An annuity company paid out an IRA to my client that she inherited from her brother. She's an eligible designated beneficiary.
So it simply means she was named as a beneficiary. That's eligible.
Good. Okay. So we can deposit that check into an inherited IRA for the stretch, correct? And the answer is sorry, no.
Sorry, no.
No. She might be a sister and an EDB, an eligible designated beneficiary, but non-spouse beneficiaries cannot do a 60-day rollover with inherited dollars.
Non-spouse.
Mm-hmm. That means you're not married. Thank you.
Why they
call it a non-spouse beneficiary is the mystery of all time. Mm. It basically means you're not married to this person, but you're still a named beneficiary. Well, how do you do such a thing? You have to transfer it direct to a properly named beneficiary IRA. You can't receive other contributions to it. It has to be a direct transfer. Okay, do I really care if it's $10,000 and I pay the tax? Probably not. But what if it's $100,000, mm-hmm. and that's all added to your income that year? Maybe not so much fun. What if you actually want to control the tax and you want to take it out over a 10-year period? Sorry, that's all lost. So a beneficiary IRA, you have to empty it over a 10-year period by December 31st of the year after following the year in which you receive those funds. So we'll just call it 10 years. Mm-hmm. But you can spread that out over a number of years and really pay, in most cases, a much lower tax rate. Mm-hmm. So when these amounts are smaller, it's not as big a deal. But when they get larger, and all of a sudden, Aunt Jeannie, this is a fake name, okay, everybody? Aunt Jeannie gave you a $500,000 IRA. She named you the best niece ever in the world as her primary beneficiary on her IRA. Aunt Jeannie doesn't want you to waste all that, have to waste all that money in tax. Mm-hmm. So if you transfer it direct to that properly named beneficiary IRA, that's why we have a 17-page document at our office that we regularly review with parents and their children to help them understand, okay, here are the 6 points. It takes 20 minutes to go through this. It's not rocket science. But if you understand the rules, boy, you can avoid a lot of taxes mm-hmm. and penalties, possibly even.
So I have a question for your services. Obviously, you deal with parents, and you said you've taken this into consideration. But
sure.
if the sister here listens to Dennis Prout, is not a client, and she finds out she's getting this account.
Inheritance.
Yeah, this inheritance. Before she does anything, can she call your office and say, can I set an appointment to ask this particular question?
Oh, sure.
You do that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
We offer a one-hour no-obligation consultation, and that just falls right under that. That's so simple. And we honestly love those kind of conversations because that document that we've got is from Ed Slott. So we can really help arm people, if you will, even if they would decide they don't want to become clients. We understand that.
Yep.
And this kind of brings up another important topic. It's like you need to check your beneficiaries regularly. You know, always keep that up to date and make sure you have beneficiaries.
Prout Beneficiary Day.
Yes. Did we ever name that day?
No,
we need to. Check your beneficiaries.
Maybe it's July 1st, just before Independence Day, right?
Yeah.
Ooh,
yeah.
That's my birthday.
Ooh,
are you serious?
Yeah.
Ooh.
That's fun.
Information.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Let's make a note of that, shall we, Ron? Okay.
Yes.
All right, one more question. My client did a $150,000 Roth conversion. Now he is over the income limits to contribute to a Roth IRA. Is there any fix? And the answer is no worries. Roth conversions do not count against total income for Roth contributions. See IRS Publication 590A.
I'm sorry. I was busy writing July 1st down. Could you repeat the first part of that question again?
My client did a $150,000 Roth conversion. Now he is over the income limits to contribute to a Roth IRA.
Okay, pause for just a moment. So this is great. So that income then was added to this individual's, the income from the conversion is added, it's taxable income, but it doesn't count against the contribution level amounts, okay? So that's a very interesting question too.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So points, it sometimes your preconceived notions are wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Again, thank you, OSU.
That's funny.
You know, even the preacher on Sunday got into it. He said they were all going to be offering grief counseling after the service.
Oh, boy.
Yes.
All right, and one more. With the market downturn, my client has a lot of capital losses. Can we use these to offset a Roth conversion? And the answer is only $3,000 of capital losses can be used to offset your Roth conversion.
Yeah. Does that compute?
Does not compute here.
Yeah. So capital losses. Mm-hmm. You can only use $3,000 a year unless.
What's a capital loss?
Well,
you're saying
you bought a house.
Yes.
Next door. It's not. It's a business deal. It's not. I don't know. It's a good illustration. Now let's say you bought a stock. So you bought J.P. Morgan when it was $200. And I honestly, I don't know the current price. So don't. Please don't use this as an actual example. It's just an example of something going down.
Yeah.
Well, 3 months later, it's 170 to say, I'm getting out of here. So I got a loss on this stock. To the extent that it's more than $3,000 your loss, you can't use it in that year. You can use up to that amount against income. However, unless you have capital gains on other stock that where you can use that against the loss. So gains, capital gains, losses can be used up to the extent of your gain for that year, okay? Capital losses can be used against gains only, but they can't be used any more than $3,000 against income.
Okay.
And that's the difference here, okay?
Question on the text line.
Sure.
An RMD question. Is there legislation proposed or pending to gradually increase the age for the required minimum
Distribution, correct.
To gradually increase the age for the required minimum distribution from 72 now to 75.
Yeah, it's in the proposal. It's in the works, and that would be fascinating. This question so reminds me of some of the questions we're getting in the retirement class these days. They are much more complex and informed. So kudos to this person, whomever sent this text in, because that is a great point. We're thinking that it eventually is going to go to 75 because we're living so much longer. You know? So given that reality, that would be fantastic. It would be another tax break. And another tax break that people don't realize they're going to be getting this next year is the 12%, 10%, 12%. These lower brackets are expanding. They're all expanding in terms of their income amounts. So you're going to get a tax break, even though it's not technically a tax break, tax cut. It is a tax break next year for 2023. So given that these lower brackets have expanded, you might be pleasantly surprised next year.
Darling, we owe less tax than we thought, eh?
So if that's the case, it can be kind of nice for 23.
We did have a question that said, how did Taco Bell write that canon in D? Oh, that's Taco Bell there, not Taco Bell. Just
that's great.
Oh, that's great.
Request for the Christmas canon. There we go.
That's fantastic.
I was just thinking a bit about the stock market here. Since September 30th of this year, the October just experienced was the biggest up October since 1976. And I know that we referenced this in one of the earlier programs, but who of the prognosticators said that they thought the market was due for a significant increase? Did anyone? No. I think it was relatively silent in regards to that because I think everybody was just kind of watching. Mm. And what's interesting is the stock market itself, those who are looking to make investments for the long term simply saw an opportunity and they surprised us all because they tend to look in the future. They're much more futuristically orientated than we tend to be. They tend to look out about 6 to 9 months ahead, even though we're probably going to have volatility in the coming year, and we're probably going to experience some sort of a recession still. They're looking at what the potential is out longer. So that's a significant reason these markets, I say, have gone up to the extent that they have. Now, it does not mean, of course, that this thing can't come back down, and we won't experience volatility. But it's interesting nonetheless to see and just observe what's happened because part of that positive was they thought the Fed was going to blink on raising rates to the extent that they had promised they would. Well, guess what? That was the news yesterday. Of course, they're not going to raise rates as aggressively as they said they would, or at least that's what they're starting to say now. Because they're following the markets in terms of demand for money. They are not leading. They don't lead interest rates. They don't. They simply follow the market's own demands. And what did we have? Tremendous demand for money, which drove up interest rates anyway. And the Fed was simply reflecting that increased demand. So they raised interest rates. They also raised rates to try to calm inflation. Well, what's the cause of inflation? Too much money chasing too few goods. Too much money into the economy. And so that's why they caused this seesaw or this almost fight between the Fed and the federal government, between all this money flowing into the economy from the U.S. Gov. Yeah. And in essence, its creation of inflation. So, you know, one side is in essence helping to create it. There is never a single silver bullet where we can point to this happened, thus X. You know, X never drives Y exactly. It doesn't work that way, and we all know that. You know, if you get up late every morning for a week, it's not going to have a negative impact for the rest of your life. But if you continue doing that, you know, as an example, whatever it might be, there's never an exact response to it, but it does tend to follow certain rules and or indicators. given those indicators and the rules of what was being spent and how much was being, if you will, moved into the economy, there's the result, higher interest rates. And so, most likely, we'll tend to see a lowering of rates, or a lowering of the increase in rates, rather, this coming year, and probably volatility still, because the market is still waiting to see how are these companies going to do, given all this noise that's been going on, their own increased cost, not only for money, but for transportation and all the rest.
Some of the big tech firms, and others may follow, but have thousands and thousands of layoffs. And I've seen predictions that there will be more, and unemployment could go up.
Oh, yeah.
So,
absolute.
How will that affect the Fed decisions?
Absolutely. Because they'll look at that as the stats in terms of our own, in terms of hiring and or current employees, if you will, out there working. So the workforce itself, given those numbers coming down, that will certainly impact the Fed's willingness to tamp down or their increases, if you will, or not to maybe increase at all. We'll see when that happens. All right. So that tends to drive the growth potential further out, not necessarily next month. Okay.
Dennis, that's such a good reminder for us. I'm glad you said that the market tends to look 6 months out. Like,
yes.
What it's doing today is the future.
Yes, right.
It's a good reminder for us all.
I think so, and it is for me, too, because, I mean, I didn't think that was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I really didn't. So, yeah.
Let me ask, if I may, how is everything on 8th and Garfield, the new offices? Everything going as expected?
I would speak for everyone there. I love the place. It's
Absolutely.
Really working out well.
Mm-hmm.
We are thrilled to have it and have it opened, and parking is much better. So for those who want to drop in, please do.
Yes.
Love to see you. Mm-hmm. Got a nice big lobby there with actually some real heat, in the form of a fireplace there.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cozy. You bet.
And
we
and
have
the staff swimming promised, pool. The staff swimming pool is.
Yeah.
You might smell chlorine when you go in.
Yeah, that's right.
No.
I'm teasing. So is Ron.
Yeah.
But we do have a much bigger chocolate.
Bowl
of chocolate.
Bowl of chocolate.
Yes.
So, yes.
Yes, we
As
do.
Promised.
Same phone number, though, 947-3992.
That's what I was going to say. 231-947-3992.